Marlins Hot Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Tyson fires, Morneau swings, loops one into center field, out goes Etch, a long way out, he dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
Hey, hello again, everybody. It is 7 o'clock on a Monday night, and that can only mean one thing. It is time once again to fire up the hot stove as we get set to spend the better part of the next hour talking Marlins baseball, and boy, oh boy, is there a lot to talk about tonight. It was 4 days ago, just about this time, that the news broke out of the GM meetings in Scottsdale. The Marlins were deep in discussion with Giancarlo Stanton on what would be the richest contract in the history of not just Major League Baseball, but in all of North American professional sports. Now, while there is still no official announcement of this deal from the Marlins, no press release, no formal word that a press conference has been scheduled despite a lot of reports circulating, owner Jeffrey Loria, in the last couple of hours, has indeed confirmed, first to John Heyman of CBSSports.com and the MLB Network, and then to Clark Spencer of the Miami Herald, he has confirmed that, yes, the deal is done. No one else from either side has discussed these negotiations since they began, and while I've asked, no one from either side is going to address anything with us here tonight. Jeffrey Loria, though, telling the Miami Herald that this is a, quote, landmark day. It means everything to the franchise. We have a face of the franchise for the next 13 years. While there is reportedly an opt-out clause after six seasons, the Marlins owner said, quote, I expect him to be a Marlin for 13 years. We're going to be surrounding him. We have already started to surround him with all-star caliber players, and there are going to be more. Talking about his all-star right fielder, Loria said he obviously saw last season that this franchise is serious about winning and serious about doing great things in the new stadium. Loria finished by saying, we're going to surround him with an improved lineup as well. We need another bat in that lineup that can help him out. So that's Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria talking a couple of hours ago to the Miami Herald. Again, no official word from the club beyond that, and no one breaking the organizational silence to come out with us tonight. But I'm going to take the owner's word on this. Giancarlo Stanton and the Marlins have agreed to a 13-year contract, reportedly worth a record $325 million. So what do you think? You like it? Are you in the camp that says, I don't care what it took to get a deal done, the Marlins simply had no choice but to extend Giancarlo Stanton? Or maybe you don't like it. You're a little bit nervous? You think it's too much to risk for the Marlins? Intelligent people can certainly debate a contract that guarantees 13 seasons and about one-third of $1 billion to a single player. In a market like this, the formula to build a consistent winner begins with developing homegrown stars and then finding a way to keep them. In Giancarlo Stanton, the Marlins have a homegrown star. They've got a homegrown superstar, and they have found a way to keep him. Having just turned 25 last week and playing now in an era where offense has plunged to its lowest levels in 30 years, Giancarlo is already the single most feared slugger in the game. This contract isn't merely betting on what a player might do over the next decade plus. It's acknowledging what he did in 2014 and what he's accomplished over his first 5 years in the big leagues, while also realizing he's not even entered the prime seasons of his career yet. Giancarlo, coming off a season in which he won the Hank Aaron Award as the best offensive player in the National League, he finished second in MVP voting, he was a Gold Glove finalist. You look at what he's done on the field and off the field to this point, and there is no team in baseball that wouldn't choose to build its lineup around Giancarlo Stanton if given that opportunity. What the Marlins will do when this deal is once and for all made 100% official is assure that they'll be building their lineup around him for a very long time. It is great for baseball when teams can hold on to their own young players for the long haul, and it'll be great for Miami in the next couple of days when the Marlins formally announce that we're going to be able to watch Giancarlo Stanton at baseball's very hard and very far at Marlins Park for many, many years to come. So what do you think? I'll give you a chance to jump on the phone and share your thoughts a little bit later in the show. If you want to make a note of it right now, 866-801-0940 is the number to call. That number again, 866-801-0940. If you prefer, you can also tweet me your thoughts at Glenn Geffner. Glenn with two N's, Geffner two F's. My guess is for the Marlins fan, the ongoing Giancarlo Stanton contract talks and apparently the resolution of these negotiations certainly front and center on your mind right now as the Marlins look to a future with Giancarlo Stanton. 13 years, $325 million, just a staggering deal. Great news for the Marlins. We'll talk about it more as the night goes on. Now, as we told you, we debuted this show last week. In addition to talking baseball with you every Monday night, I want to give you a chance to hear from many of your favorite Marlins players over the course of the winter. And tonight, going to catch up with the man who in recent weeks has been honored as the 2014 National League Comeback Player of the Year by something like 147 different organizations, I think. Joining us, I believe, from his home up in Tennessee, Marlins third baseman Casey McGee. Casey, thanks for spending some time with us tonight.
No problem, Glenn. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Good to talk some baseball. Obviously, the Marlins very much in the news tonight. It's what everybody in baseball is talking about. Got to lead off with you by asking for your reaction to what's now being reported is done. Giancarlo Stanton, 13 years and $325 million. What do you think?
No, it's good. I mean, I don't know if he knows this yet, but all of our friend dues in the clubhouse are going up considerably. He's made to be our friend a lot more than he did before.
For sure.
Now, but seriously, I'm happy for him. Obviously, it's talking about a lot of money, a lot of years, and you can't think of too many people that you would be willing to extend, not even take the money out of it, just for that many years. But Stanton, being that he is only 25 and still learning, still continuing to get better. And what he's done to this point, is one of those rare guys that's young enough, that's had a long enough track record to where you feel like you know what you're going to get, if not improve on that, and get him for his prime years. And I think the coolest thing about it to me is that this has got a chance for him, when it's all said and done, when he's old and retired, to not only be the face of the Marlins for the time he's playing, but really be the face of the Marlins, forever. Be the first guy that he'll have probably the longest tenure of anybody, and the numbers, he's going to set every record imaginable as a Marlin. Great guy on and off the field. Kind of what you see is what you get. And, I don't think the money's going to change his personality or the way he goes about his business one bit. Great time to be a Marlins fan right now.
For sure. I would want to ask you a little bit more about your experience watching Giancarlo on a nightly basis last season, but I want to talk about you and the year you had first, joining the Marlins after a season playing in Japan. You signed your contract about a week before Christmas last year, so take me back to this time a year ago. You had just gotten back from that season in Japan. You were a free agent, hoping for another shot at the big leagues. What was your state of mind about Thanksgiving last year?
Well, I think, I was. I was just getting home about right now. It was a long season and was really, in my mind, thinking about what I was going to, how long I had until I had to get back on the plane and go back to Japan, really. And then not too long after I got home, started getting some phone calls from my agent, letting me know that there's teams kind of sniffing around, and it looked like there may be a possibility that I was going to be able to come home and play in the big leagues. And, as things kind of drug out a little bit, when we got to the winter meeting, he had a meeting with Mike Hill and Dan Jennings, and he called me after the meeting. He said, let's not sign anything to go back to Japan. And these guys asked for 48 hours to put something together, and they're pretty confident that if you give them that amount of time, that they'll make something that'll make you a Marlin. And they were true to their word and couldn't have been happier.
Yeah, things worked out for you really well. I know in talking to you over the course of the season, you're not the kind of guy who's going to sit down in June or August or September and evaluate your season at that point. But now that you've been able to remove yourself a little bit, a year later, when you look at how far you've come over the course of this last season, how special was this last year for you?
It was definitely rewarding. I think towards the end, kind of left a little bit of a bitter taste in everybody's mouth. We were right there on the cusp of contending to get into the postseason. We couldn't ever quite get over that hump. And then the way, Stanton got hurt, and the way that everything finished up was a little bit tough. But now that I've been away from it for a little while, just as a group, I think a lot of things to really be proud of, how much we grew up as a team, and the expectations this time. Kind of like myself, in a way, this time last year, the expectations were 180 degrees different than what they are now. I'm just excited and proud of what we were able to do as a team, especially once Jose went down. I mean, that's a big blow. There's not too many teams that are going to be able to withstand their best pitcher going down that early in the season. And, you know, it was a blessing in disguise in the fact that we had some guys, you know, Tom Kohler, Alvarez, even Brad Hand towards the end when he came back, really stepped up and had an opportunity to prove that they could be, you know, important pieces of a rotation. And I think we learned a lot about who we are as a group. And now it's time for us to get ready to really get out there and grind, because now I think the expectations are there that it's time for us to compete. And it's not going to be just the 25 guys in that clubhouse. It's going to be, I think, a little bit more around town and around the country that, you know, we're not sneaking up on anybody quite as much as we were last year. And we accomplished a lot.
I'm going to blow you into our listeners here a little bit now. It's pretty obvious. You're a guy who does not like talking about himself. You like talking about everything in the team context. I'm trying to get you to talk about yourself a little bit here. But you're a team guy. Where does that come from? Who along the line ingrained that in you, that it's not about one guy, it's about the 25?
You know, I think my dad was probably the first one. You know, he had a line that I always, you know, I've always liked to kind of try to remember, that even when I was in high school or Little League, he said, you know, even if you're the best player on a bad team, I think he probably said a little more colorfully than this, but, you know, if you're a best player on a bad team, what does that really make you? And all it makes you is a little bit better than bad, you know. So you're never going to accomplish anything if you don't have the 25 guys around you, you know, pulling their weight. And, you know, I think that, and then fast forward when I was in Double A, I had a manager who's now the third base coach of the Orioles, Bobby Dickerson. And he sat us down and told us that, and it really made sense. He said, if you go out and bust it every day, take an extra 90 feet when you can and play the game right, you make the next guy's job easier. Every good team you're on, you look up and down the lineup and everybody's got career years. And a lot of the reason for that is, you know, if I'm on first base and I got a chance to go first to third, even though I may not run like Yelich or Ozuna or Edge, with my opportunities there, if I put in a full effort, I can get to third base, less than two outs, make the guy behind me's job easier. And when it's his turn to be on base, and that same situation comes up, you know, he's kind of accountable now to put that same effort forth to make the next guy's job easier. And it just gets contagious that way. And it could be a lot of fun when you've got everybody pulling on the same end of the rope.
Well, that attitude that you brought really rubbed off on guys in this clubhouse in 2014. And for you, who knows what it means to be a good teammate and wants the other people be good teammates and respected in a clubhouse, it has to be extra special. You want to mention a ton of comeback player of the year awards. MLB.com had a media panel that voted, but the Sporting News and the Players' Choice Awards comeback player of the year honors were both voted upon by your peers. And I would imagine that's the kind of honor that's got to mean the most to you.
Yeah, anytime you've got the guys that you compete with and against recognize you for anything that's positive is definitely an honor. You know, sometimes you go out there and I got to catch myself sometimes. You see people that, you know, I mean, I'm a fan of the game and I watch other games when we're not playing. And, there's guys I really like to watch and I look up to. And it's just, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling to think that those are the guys that are voting for you for anything, and it makes you feel really good. And but the most important thing is, even take the awards out of it, you know, I feel like I hope that the guys I play with every day can count on me to go out and do my job the best I can every day, realizing that some days I'm not going to be very good, some days I'm going to be all right. And I feel like if I can get that trust from those guys, then that's really all the confirmation or whatever I need. But it definitely is nice whenever you're recognized for something like that.
We're talking with Marlins third baseman Casey McGee. This is Marlins Hot Stove, the second of our weekly Hot Stove shows over the course. So we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, going to have a few more minutes with Casey, a lot more to get to. I want to talk some more about his first season here in Miami. I want to talk some more about what it was like hitting cleanup behind Giancarlo Stanton, the man certainly making the headlines here right now. So we'll take a quick break. More with Casey McGee right after this. So stay with us. It's Marlins Hot Stove on your home for the Marlins, 940 Wins.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. Winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner on 940 Wins.
Right around third, Ozuna the throw to the plate, and Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth.
Miami Sports.
Shots up to Casey. Ninth in the league in average, sixth in hits beginning the day. And he drives one to the gap in left center field. A long run, and Marte can't get there. One hop up against the wall. Baker's in to score. Here comes for Kyle. Casey McGee has done it again. A two-out, two-run double in the bottom of the eighth to pull the Marlins even at two. Now, Casey McGee did it a lot in 2014. He's our guest tonight on Marlins Hot Stove. Casey, hitting in the clutch, you spent the better part of last year leading the major leagues and average with men in scoring position. You had a knack for driving in runs. Your approach in situations like that, is it any different when you're batting with a man at third base, runners in scoring position, than in another kind of situation?
No, not necessarily. I think the biggest thing for me was that, you know, especially playing in Miami, the infield's fast, the outfield's huge, obviously. There's a lot of space if you use the middle of the field to do some damage, and obviously not the kind of damage that Stan does. But you know, I think that kind of plays into my game of trying to use a big part of the field and just hit the ball hard. And with kind of a fast track and all that, you know, you can really take advantage of it. It is a tough place to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So with guys on base, you know, really tried to shorten my swing a little bit more than even normal. And try to stay in the big part of the field. And, you know, the great thing about it was with Stanton and Ozuna, and well, Ozuna hitting behind me and Stanton in front of me and Yelly setting the table, and then whoever we had hit second, you know, I had guys on base all the time, it felt like. The one thing that obviously I would have liked to have cleaned up a little bit was the number of double plays I hit into, but at the same time I think it was kind of a double-edged sword. In the fact that that approach was allowing me to be successful in those situations, but at the same time, me not being the fastest guy in the world is also gonna result in hitting into some double plays. And so, you know, that's something that I've definitely thought about this offseason. You know, in those situations, maybe be a little bit more selective to not only try to use a big part of the field, but maybe try to get the ball off the ground a little bit more. But I think that. At the end of the day, the pitcher's in a tough spot right there. So, you know, he's got to take what he's going to give you. And a lot of times that'll be, you know, something up the middle the other way that'll do just fine.
You talked, even going back to spring training last year, about how your approach at the plate had evolved during your year in Japan. And you realized that maybe looking at the long ball is not what you need to be doing. Hit the ball hard, line drives, as you talked about, using the whole field, hitting the ball back up the middle. And it's interesting to hear you talk about Marlins Park. This is a park where a lot of people say, oh, it's a tough place to hit. But for this approach, it seems like it's a perfect place for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think realistically, would I've liked to, if you'd asked me this time last year, if you had told me I was going to end the year with four home runs, I would have been pretty surprised. But I do think that the ballpark definitely plays to my strengths. You know, if the outfielder is going to play shallow to take away anything in front of them, you do hit a ball hard, it's going to roll for an awful long ways, and vice versa. If they're going to play deep to not let anything get to the wall, there's a lot of stuff that's going to fall in front of them. So the outfielders are kind of in a tough spot off the top from the size of it, and not to mention, like I said, it's fast. So I think in a lot of ways it is a perfect ballpark for somebody that tries to use the middle of the field.
You're talking with Marlins third baseman Casey McGee. Casey, what's your off-season routine like? You take some time off, or are you back at it already?
Yeah, I'm back at it. I gave myself till the end of the World Series to kind of just relax and recover and unwind. And then right at the end of the World Series, the day after the World Series, I got back in the gym and started getting my body ready for next year. And, you know, here in the next week or two, pick up a bat again and start throwing and getting a little bit more baseball specific, but I don't like to take too much time off. It's kind of over the years I found I do better when I get back in it quicker than waiting around. So I'm already chomping at the bit. I wish spring training was closer than it was, for sure. And I'm a little bummed. We got bad weather here. It's already down. I'm looking at the thermometer right now. It's 29. So I haven't been able to do as much fishing as I wanted to. I was actually looking at the stuff online last night, and I was getting jealous of all the people in Miami. I need somebody to take me out and put me on some peacock bass down there, because that looks like a pretty good time.
They've got a cold front coming through. They're supposed to get down in the 50s tomorrow night, so look out.
Yeah, Yeah, that sounds terrible. We got snow on the roofs, and we don't usually get much snow.
Now, where are you? Are you in Tennessee this winter?
Yeah, I'm in Tennessee, in Jackson.
Talking with Casey McGee. You follow the hot stove this time of year? Are you online and watching the MLB Network like fans are, or do you just kind of show up at spring training and see where things fell over the winter?
I mean, I know it's kind of hard not to, because everybody that's around you that's a baseball fan, you know, if something big goes down, they'll text you like, oh, did you see XYZ? My wife, a lot of times, will tip me off. She told me about the Jason Hayward trade earlier today.
Did she like it? Does she have an opinion?
Been quite as much as I do.
Talking with Casey McGee, want to come back to the man who was making a lot of hot stove headlines right now, your teammate Giancarlo Stanton. What was it like hitting behind him in the lineup? You had the best seat in the house. You had kind of a dangerous seat in that on-deck circle at times, but you've played with some great hitters. You were in a lineup with Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder in Milwaukee. You spent part of a season with the Yankees, some Hall of Famers in that lineup. Give us some perspective watching Giancarlo on a daily basis.
Man, it was just a pleasure to watch. I mean, it was, you'd find yourself just kind of as a fan watching him, because you knew it was one swing of the bat away from seeing something that you'd never seen before. I go back to the home run he hit against the Cubs to right field.
Line drive.
And, I mean, from on deck, usually I got a pretty good idea because I can hear the sound and everything from that close if he's got a hold of one. And I swear to you, I thought that was a line drive that was maybe going to get down in front of the right fielder. And then as it kept going, I thought, okay, well, it's going to get down the line. And there was no thought in my mind that it was going to leave the ballpark. And, you know, it's just, like you said, what a cool seat to sit there and watch some of the longest home runs you'll ever see. I mean, it's not even the home runs. It's the line drive singles and stuff that he hits that come off his bat that when I get up to the plate, the catcher's kind of looking at me and like I had something to do with it. And it's kind of fun just to look at him and say, I don't know what to tell you, man. The guy's not human.
I remember the ground ball double he hit actually off Jared Cozart in Houston with the bases loaded in the first inning. We were at Minute Maid Park. It was a ground ball past the shortstop, and next thing you knew, it was rattling up against the wall. It's just one of those things that nobody else does.
No, it is. And that's the thing. Everybody talks about the home runs, but it's the ones that he doesn't even lift off the ground. The ground ball is the third base. Like, there's no part of me wants you playing third base when he's hit. You tell me to play infield in with him hitting, I ain't doing it. And, I mean, I got a real sense of how strong the guy was. We were playing Tampa, and he got jammed. And he hit a soft line drive. The shortstop ended up jumping and catching. And the barrel of his bat hit me in the ribs. And I'm going to tell you, I've got hit by fastballs, whatever. That stuck with me probably 3 weeks. I had a barrel bruise on my rib cage. And just the velocity that his bat split in two was, it was kind of scary. It was almost like being in a car wreck. Every time I went up there, I was a little bit uneasy for about a week or two after that. But you just don't see what he does from anybody else. He's a different animal.
We see where third base coaches position themselves. Where Brett Butler is down the line most of the time when Giancarlo comes up as the man on deck. Is that something you're thinking of regularly?
It goes through, after he hit me with that one. It went through my mind a couple times,
yeah.
But. Maybe at this point I should let him stick me with one. I could sue him.
Well, you benefited a lot from all the intentional walks. He had 24 intentional walks this year, led the league twice as many as the number two man in the league. And one of the things I kept track of over the course of the season is the success that you had after Giancarlo was walked intentionally. I know it's not one of those things where you take it personally when they're walking Stanton. They do that to pitch no matter who's on deck. But coming through time and time again like that after Giancarlo was walked intentionally, that was a big part of your success and this team's success this season, it seemed.
Yeah, you know, like you said, I knew it wasn't anything personal. I would do the same thing if I was in the other dugout. I'm going to pretty much let anybody you can think of beat me except for Stant. But some of the best memories I have from the season is after that, when I was the times I was able to get a hit, was his reaction on second base. A lot of times he was more excited for me than anything, because I'm sure from his standpoint, it's got to get frustrating. And you know, I try to tell him like, hey, I'm trying my best to get him to pitch to you. It's your own fault. You're doing too much damage. But he was always so good about it. He never let me know it bothered him. You know, and he let me feel like he had confidence in me to do the job. And that was a big part of me being able to have whatever success I did have was just knowing that I felt like he had confidence in me to pick him up.
As we wrap up with Casey McGee, Casey, let's look forward to 2015. A lot of terrific young talent really blossomed this past season. You look ahead to the new year. Just how dangerous do you think this Marlins team can be?
I think the sky's the limit, really. We've got some young guys that took huge steps throughout the year last year, and if they can continue to progress, you know, the way they have been, you know, the sky's the limit. Ozuna, I think, is the guy that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. He's right on the cusp of being a tremendous, tremendous player. And then obviously Yelly got his Gold Glove, which I was really proud of for him. And he does so many things. I think we're just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg, what he's going to end up being when it's all said and done. And Etch, you know, we all know what he can do with the glove and how much range he covers. But, you know, he really started to turn around with the bat. I think his confidence is only going to grow. You know, I think those guys are so important to our team. And then you go to the pitching staff, and if there's just so much to like. You know, we get a full year of Brian Morris, who was great when we got him. You know, Schreck, obviously, you always feel good about him. Dunner, you know, there's not too many guys throwing 95, 96 from the left side. Ramos comes in, and he's a little bulldog. He's gonna fight you tooth and nail. And, you know, I think, you know, even some of the guys like Garrett Jones, you know, I've seen him when he's been really good, and we saw glimpses of it. I'm sure he'd be the first to tell you probably not as much as he would have hoped. But when he's going good, man, he can hit. And, you know, Salty, I think another year being more comfortable with our pitching staff, more comfortable in his surroundings and stuff like that is gonna be huge for him. So there's a lot to like. And we get to see the alien pitch every fifth day again with Alvarez. And we already know we're going to make the biggest acquisition of the year whenever Fernandez comes back. You know, with what the little bit I got to see of him, he's special. You know, that's a once in a lifetime stuff that he's throwing up there. And you know, if he can even be close to what he was, he's going to be pretty darn good.
Now, this team made huge strides in 2014. Casey McGee was a big part of the improvement. 15 wins more in 2014 than in 2013. Biggest jump in the National League. Looking to do something similar again next season. Casey, thank you so much for taking some time out of your winter to talk to us tonight. And throw another log on the fire, get back to bundling up and enjoying the cold up there.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Anytime.
All right, that's Marlins third baseman Casey McGee, our guest tonight on Marlins Hot Stove. Want to give you a chance to chime in as we wrap things up here with one more segment coming up. If you'd like to jump online, 866-801-0940, the number to call, 866-801-0940. What do you think about the Giancarlo Stanton deal? It has not yet been officially announced by the Marlins, but it was confirmed late this afternoon by Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria. What do you think? Big doings. 13 years, reportedly $325 million for the Marlins right fielder. Let's get your thoughts. Jump online now and join us as we continue on Marlins Hot Stove. Looking ahead to 2015, don't forget now is the time to reserve your 2015 seats at Marlins Park. Season ticket plans start at just $380. You can take advantage of the new $15 per game full season plan with great seat locations and a free Marlins jersey for every two seats purchased. Place your deposit today and start enjoying all the savings and benefits of being a Marlins season ticket holder. Call 1-877-MARLINS or go to marlins.com/2015tickets. Got a few more minutes. Want to hear from you when we come back on Marlins Hot Stove here on 940 Wins.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Talking baseball, another 10-15 minutes with you tonight as we get you set for Monday Night Football. The Steelers and the Titans coming up. Mention the news of the day in Major League Baseball. Giancarlo Stanton, 13 years, $325 million, not yet officially announced by the Marlins, but by owner Jeffrey Loria confirming that the deal is done. He did so talking with John Heyman of CBSSports.com and the MLB Network, as well as with Miami Herald's Clark Spencer late this afternoon. That is certainly the news of the day for the Marlins. When you look at this signing, getting a lot of questions on Twitter, what do you think? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Look, anytime you can lock up a superstar for essentially his entire major league career, it's a great thing. You know what Giancarlo Stanton is capable of doing. He still is only 25 years old. And this isn't a contract you give to anybody, but Giancarlo Stanton at this age, with what he has already accomplished in the major leagues, you go back to 2010, he didn't make his big league debut until June of 2010. But going all the way back to the start of 2010, no player in the National League has hit more home runs than Giancarlo Stanton. And you've seen him get better and better and become not just a slugger, not just a home run hitter, but a better all-around hitter, a player who this past season was a finalist for the National League's Gold Glove Award in right field, a guy who will steal a base on you, plays hard, plays the game right, played every single game of the season until he was hit in the face September 11th in Milwaukee by Mike Fiers. This is the kind of guy you want locked up. And I've seen the Marlins take some heat for this signing online. I find it funny in that, to me, it's one of those things, and you look at the Marlins' track record in this regard and fans' reaction to the Marlins in this regard, a lot of the people who I think are killing the Marlins for making this deal today would be killing the Marlins a year from now if they traded Giancarlo Stanton, or if in 2 years let Giancarlo walk via free agency. So you can't have it both ways. The Marlins taking a huge risk, no doubt. Now, to me, the one legitimate question in committing so much money to one player is how do you build a well-balanced championship-caliber ball club around Stanton when he himself is making so much money? And I asked Michael Hill, who joined us last week on the show, that exact question. At that point, we didn't have any parameters in a Stanton deal. It was all very hypothetical. But we said, if you're able to sign Stanton to a massive contract, how are you then able to build a championship team around him with all that outlay going just one player?
Well, it is definitely a fragile balance, and it just puts the emphasis on building an organization and making sure that you have the overall depth in your system, in your minor league system, and you have quality talent that you're drafting and developing, so that you can keep productive and talented players around those big ticket items. And from our standpoint, and similarly with Giancarlo, he wants to win. That's definitely a common denominator in both sides, that we both want to win. And I think that's what will allow us to be a successful franchise from now and every year after is to make sure that we have a consistent flow of talent that comes and helps when there's whatever injuries and anything that happens, as we always know things will happen in a major league season, and that we're prepared and we can deal with them and keep winning ball games.
It's the Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill, talking about that fragile balance when you pay one player on average $25 million per season, how you put together a ball club around him that's good enough to compete for championships. Marlins have talked about the fact that after getting a Stanton deal done, they like to go after Christian Yelich and Adani Echevarria and potentially Marcelo Ozuna, Jose Fernandez, other great young players in this team, and get them locked up for the foreseeable future. And yet, as you heard in the comments from Jeffrey Loria earlier today, he too sounds committed to still going out and adding a bat to this lineup heading into 2015. This team was dramatically improved offensively from 2013 to 2014, from being dead last in the major leagues in virtually every single meaningful offensive category. This was a team in the top five, top seven or so in the National League in almost all offensive categories this past season. So a huge improvement there. Casey McGee, a big part of that, being added to the lineup. A healthy full season of Giancarlo Stanton up until mid-September, certainly a big part of that. But the development of Christian Yelich, the development of Marcelo Ozuna, big part there. Adani Echevarria, more experience getting better, big part of that there. But still, I think many believe this team needs another bat, second base, a place where potentially you could add a bat. Could the Marlins do something at first base? Potentially, we'll see. But that's the challenge now with Giancarlo Stanton presumably locked up for the next 13 years. How do you build around him and make this team a championship-caliber team at Marlins Park moving forward? Speaking of Marlins Park, I want to remind you, college football is going to come to the ballpark this winter. Make your plans for the inaugural Miami Beach Bowl. It'll be at Marlins Park on Monday, December 22nd. College football coming back to the side of the Orange Bowl as the BYU Cougars match up against an opponent from the American Athletic Conference Individual tickets, group tickets, and hospitality packages on sale now at MiamiBeachBowl.com. Don't miss the first ever Miami Beach Bowl coming up December 22nd, just over a month away at Marlins Park. In addition to the Stanton news, some other major baseball news today. The Toronto Blue Jays have reportedly agreed with Russell Martin, the big free agent catcher prize on the market this winter. Russell Martin, the former Pirate, reportedly agreeing to a five-year, $82 million contract with the Blue Jays. Toronto looking to make a run in that American League East. It's an interesting time in that division. The Rays are down. The Yankees are down. The Red Sox are down. They're all looking to come back. But the Orioles have emerged as the class of that division, and the Blue Jays hoping they have a run in them with Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, with Jose Reyes on that ball club, R.A. Dickey. Now Russell Martin, who for his performance on the field and his leadership both on and off the field was a very, very highly sought-after commodity this winter. Martin, who broke in with the Dodgers, went on to play for the Yankees, a big part of the Pirates' success the last 2 years. He has reportedly agreed for 5 years with the Blue Jays. Toronto, the only team willing to go to 5 years on Russell Martin. Cubs wanted him badly. There was some speculation the Dodgers might have wanted to try to bring him back this winter, but the Dodgers seemed to sit this one out. Russell Martin headed to Toronto, according to reports today. And the Braves, as you look at the National League East, made a big trade today. The Braves and the Cardinals getting together on a deal that I think tells you a lot about both teams' intentions for 2015 and beyond. The Braves acquire Shelby Miller and right-handed pitcher Tyrell Jenkins from the Cardinals in exchange for Jason Hayward, the Atlanta native, one of the most popular Braves, and setup man Jordan Walden. The Braves get 4 years of control of Shelby Miller. They need starting pitching, but they give up Jason Hayward, who's going to be a free agent after next season. And it didn't appear as though the Braves were going to be real aggressive in trying to keep Hayward, even though he had said all along he wanted to stay in Atlanta for the long haul. Hayward has never quite replicated the offensive success he had when he first came up in 2010. He's been a terrific defensive outfielder, the best right fielder defensively in the game the last couple of seasons. Won a second Gold Glove this year, beating out Giancarlo Stanton. But for 1 year of Jason Hayward and 2 years of control of Jordan Walden, the Cardinals playing for now, playing for 2015, playing for another trip to at least the NLCS. They've been there the last 4 years in a row. Cardinals send Shelby Miller and Tyrell Jenkins to the Braves. Shelby Miller had a terrific rookie year back in 2013, his first full big league season, 15-9, a 3.06 ERA in 31 starts. Numbers dropped off a little bit in 2014. He was just 10-9, a 3.74 ERA, 31 starts again. His whip was up, walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. His strikeout rate was down dramatically. His walks were up a bit. As for Jenkins, he's a 22-year-old, five minor league seasons. He's never pitched above A-ball, Palm Beach in the Florida State League, but he had a huge fall in the Arizona Fall League, really burst back onto the scene after missing parts of the last 2 years following shoulder surgery. So he's a guy that the Braves hope might come along quickly. So we'll see a lot of Shelby Miller, now an Atlanta Brave. But we say goodbye to Jason Hayward and Jordan Walden heading from Atlanta to the St. Louis Cardinals. That is the news of the day in Major League Baseball. The big news of the day here in Miami, it appears as though Giancarlo Stanton is going to be a Marlin for a long, long time. Going to have a lot more on Giancarlo's signing, including, we hope, a conversation with Giancarlo when we do this again next week. But that's all the time we have for this week. Glad you're able to be with us tonight. I want to thank Casey McGee for being our guest. Also, a special thanks to our engineer tonight, Mike Lekomiak. Don't forget, back again next Monday and every Monday night at 7 with more Marlins guests, more Marlins talk. We'll have details about next week's show on Twitter as we get a little bit closer. Stay tuned now, Monday Night Football. It's the Steelers and the Titans coming up next on your home for Marlins baseball all season and all offseason long, Miami Sports Station, 940 WINS.